First, try to envision that story. An old man sitting on some goat skins in front of the entrance of a large tent. Some ancient oak trees are close by, but the land all around him is mostly scrub, with some cattle and sheep on it. The man's face is brown, leathery, wrinkled. Abraham is 99, but looks pretty good for his age. And now in the near distance, Abraham can make out three figures, three men. He gets up and runs to them. Yes, he runs, bows to the ground in front of them and said, "Please stop and rest with us for a while. Let me get you some water and something to eat. Come sit in the shade while I get it all ready." And then he runs into the tent and tells Sarah to hurry and put a large batch of great flour together and bake cakes, lots and lots of cakes. And then he runs out again to the herd and he personally selects a particularly good-looking calf, has his servants come over and ask them to make a barbecue. Sorry. He had said to the strangers, "Come have a little water and a bit of bread." But he's throwing them a feast. Hospitality was a really, really big deal in that culture. And Sarah and Abraham were masters of it. As the three guests and Abraham ate, one of them says, "Where's Sarah, your wife?" "In the tent," says Abraham. What he doesn't know is that she is not just in the tent, but right at the tent flap, listening to every word they say. She's almost 90, but her hearing is just fine. The stranger who is sitting closest to the tent flap now says to Abraham, "A year or so from now, she's going to have a baby. And when she hears that, Sarah laughs." Was it a giggle? Or a chuckle? Or a bwa-ha-ha? I wonder if she isn't thinking, men. Ignorant men out there talking about my body like they're the experts. She laughed and tried to hide it, to stifle it so that she wouldn't seem rude. The man who was speaking said, "Why did Sarah laugh?" And Sarah's voice from inside the tent says, "I didn't laugh." And the stranger says, "Yes, you did." What a great ending to a story. Sarah laughed. "What's your wife laughing about?" "I didn't laugh." "Yeah, you did." So why does Sarah laugh? Because she has just heard the most completely ridiculous thing. Those men out there are making pronouncements on her body clock, which has stopped ticking, that part of it at least, decades ago. She actually says to herself as she laughs, "I'm shriveled." And surely there's some bitterness in her laughter. When she was young, she had been promised she'd have babies, lots of them. Abraham told her that from her children would come descendants countless as the stars in the sky. He said God told him that. And at that time, maybe she believed it. But as those years went by, and years and years and years went by, and there was nothing. Now she was elderly. The grand promise was empty words. And now there's that man saying, next year she'll give birth. It's an asinine, cruel joke. Her laughter is bound to carry some scorn in it and some hurt. When she realizes she's been overheard, I think the reason she says, I didn't laugh, was that she feared being judged, being jerked around and hurt all over again. But now here's a surprise. We are now told that the stranger who has been foretelling this impossible birth is in fact Yahweh, the Lord, and that it's the Lord who has been asking, why did Sarah laugh? And who adds now this other question, is anything impossible with God? I didn't laugh. Yes, you did. And by the way, Abraham had done the very same thing in just the chapter before. You may not remember this, but in Genesis 17, Abraham has a vision where he is told that he and Sarah, in their old age, will have a baby. And in response, the text says, Abraham fell on his face and laughed. He didn't believe it either. Happy Father's Day, Abraham. I don't think so. But this is Sarah's story, and to be honest, I'd change it a little if I could. I think it would have been better if those three strangers, especially God, had spoken directly with her instead of to her husband without her. Talk about patriarchy. But after all, Abraham is the original patriarch. But do notice at least this much. The Lord does not at all rebuke Sarah for laughing and finding the promise ridiculous and dumb. God only asked the question, why the laugh? And then follows that, not with an assertion of God can do anything, but with another question. Is anything impossible with God? An invitation to think it over. An opening of space to make one's own reply. And that's what the story's really about. It is not at all about having babies, except in Sarah's entirely unique situation. What this story is about is the impossible, and whether or not the reality of God can redefine our sense of what is or is not impossible. The story is about whether or not we live with a closed future. That's exactly Sarah's and Abraham's situation. They are resigned to a closed future for them. And they've got every evident reason to be. They felt they'd been given a promise. They knew it hadn't come true. Bring a world a child of destiny, but no, it never ever comes. And now it's absurdly too late. And all of us here would totally agree with Sarah. Walk into her tent and sit beside her. She says, "Want to hear a good one?" And when she's told it and is holding her sides and howling with laughter, we join right in, laughing too. Because like her and her husband, we are sane mostly. And reasonable people, smart enough to believe that impossibilities are not possible. What we really don't believe in is the radical freedom of God. Are we so sure we know what cannot ever be? I am pretty sure of a number of things that can never happen, aren't you? Can the deep structures and distorted assumptions of our society ever really be changed? Our culture of hate and ignorance and false autonomy, our economics and politics, white supremacy, homophobia, transgender hatred, crushing poverty, the deification of greed. Is that going to change? We know for certain that changing that stuff is impossible. And yet there's the Lord just on the other side of the tent asking, is anything impossible with God? Which might lead us not just to rethink God's radical freedom, but to rethink our freedom too. Here's news. You and I can become partners in God's radical freedom. And we are called to nothing less. As Abraham Joshua Heschel said, despair is always premature. Wonders do happen, miracles can occur, and we do have a part to play in the working of the miracles of God. There's a Franciscan blessing that says, "May God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in this world so that you can do what others claim cannot be done." Luis Espinal was a Jesuit priest, missionary, and human rights activist in Bolivia. His work for human rights led, in the end, to his murder by government right-wing death squad. But he was a person of tremendous faith and did make a difference in his world. He wrote this prayer: "Train us, Lord, to fling ourselves upon the impossible. For behind the impossible is your grace and your presence." And to this I'll add the Chinese proverb: the one who says it cannot be done should stop interrupting those who are doing it. Never assume that real transformations are impossible. Nor think that we cannot be part of God's love bringing miracles to pass. And what about the real transformation of you? How easy it is and how common it is for human beings like me, like you, to assume we cannot change and never will, that our patterns of mind, our loops of behaviors and choices, our outcomes are fixed, endlessly repeating. Our future is closed. But here from inside the tent, we've enclosed ourselves in. We might still overhear a voice still asking, but is anything really impossible with God? And maybe with Sarah, we look at our lives and laugh at this foolishness. But maybe too, that laughter itself can be changed from cynical to the language of surprising discovery, relief, astonishment, and celebration. It happened to her. In her old age, she brought forth a child of destiny. She picked up impossibility in her arms and cradled it, sang lullabies to impossibility. Though that's not what she named the child. She and her husband gave this child of destiny their new favorite name. Laughter. Yitzhak. Isaac. Meaning laughter. And in the account of her having given this birth, we read that Sarah actually said, God has brought laughter for me, and everyone who hears will laugh with me. So the love of God invites us to hope for more than what is reasonable. The future is not closed. We can live still believing in mystery, still open to unforeseen, extraordinary events in ourselves, in the lives of people around us, even in the world at large. When Katerina and Alexandra were baptized a few minutes ago, words from the New Testament were spoken over them as they were leaving the waters. You will walk in newness of life. The gift of God is nothing less. Newness now and impossible newness always possible. We may laugh in disbelief, and we may finally laugh in astonished gratitude and praise until we are lifted into light and are brought together, joined in the great eternal laughter of God.